Silence.
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerf Ray Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 153 of Nerd Pride Radio. 153. Let me tell you, normally I do a Google search for the episode number ahead of time, find a nerd fact to go with it. And this time, instead of just typing in 153, for some reason, I typed in 153 Dalmatians just to see what would happen. And as it turns out, by bizarre coincidence, it takes me to the World Canine Organization, which is like International Kennel Club. And the World Canine Organization classification for Dalmatians is Group 6, which is scent hounds, Section 3, related breeds, number 153. By bizarre coincidence, 153 is the World Canine Organization code for Dalmatians. Go figure. I was in shock. It's serendipity. It's fate. Oh, so cool. Also, 153 is the Dewey Decimal Code for Mental Processes and Intelligence. So, ooh, nerds. Awesome. Ask me how I'm doing today. Go on.
How are you doing today?
What, all right, you're too soon on that. Ask me how I'm doing today, and then I say, go on, ask me. And that's where you ask me. All right, now I've made her mad. Way to go. As it turns out, I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D/Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd plus. There's like seven other kinds of nerd. I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. As always, you're listening to the best-smelling podcast on the internet. That's right. Nerd Pride smells exactly like the inside of R2's Potomatic bubble, which, strangely, is kind of reminiscent of machine oil and root beer. Okay. All right. Straight into the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I add it to my master list, and then the very best stuff off that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. And, oh my, I have so much stuff on the master list. I have so much. I almost considered doing a fingertips episode just so I could run through them fast, but I've got some stuff that might take a little bit of time, and I want to devote the attention to it that it deserves. So, let's jump right in. First up, it is, no, it's not that. Oh, yeah, it is. Well, where did it go? Hold on a minute. Oh, okay, I found it. I'm just an idiot. It was the right section. It's a nerd culture report.
I thought this was bowling for weirdos.
No, Gonzo, but you are very, very close. All right, this was going to be a discussion about superhero fatigue because I must hear someone talk about superhero fatigue at least three times a week. And usually in the sense that, well, are we finally getting the end of superhero movies? Are people finally sick of them? Are they finally going to stop making them? Yeah, it's going to happen eventually, but I was going to talk about that, and then it kind of transformed as I was writing stuff down and looking at other stuff, got to thinking about it, and actually I changed it to stop complaining about sequels. I know, sequelitis, that's everyone complains every summer blockbuster season, whether it's a great blockbuster season like last year or we have a bunch of weak movies like we did this year. People always complain that, yeah, but look how many of them were sequels. Look how many were part of established franchises. Look how many – why can't we do anything original anymore? Why won't studios take a risk on new material? Yeah, you know what? They do sometimes. They do. And And here's what I was observing in my own thoughts, is that sequels are nothing new. I mean, we're okay with comic books. We love comic books, don't we? Right? We're all right with that. And that's the same character doing essentially the same stuff for 20 years at a time sometimes. It goes on forever, and we're cool with that. We love our comic books. We just want to see each time it comes around and they reinvent the character. We just want to see them do something new with it. We want to see them try something different, but it's still the same character, the same villains, the same everything going on. It just, we want to see a different take on it. We want to see your take on it, and that's okay. TV shows, the whole point of a TV show is you're watching the same thing for potentially years at a time. And we're all right with that. Our book series that we read. I mean, how many of our favorite book series are trilogies or quadrilogies, or how many of them have 8, 9, 10 books in a series? We do this all the time. And yet somehow when movies do it, it bugs us. I mean, it's not like this is new, you know, because I was thinking back on pulp serials. The original Flash Gordon is the most popular example, I suppose. But looking back on old pulp movie serials where we would get, you know, you'd come back every week to see what's going to happen to our hero now. That was television shows before we had television. I was amazed to find out that Blondie, like the comic, the newspaper comic strip Blondie, was back in the day, like back in the 20s or 30s, I think, was a bunch of serial movies that you would come back on a regular basis every, you know, however long. And I don't know how far apart they were spaced out, you know, every couple of months or what it was. But you would come back to the theater for a brand new Blondie and Dagwood movie. And they'd have some new story going on. And as you read the plots of them, you realize, oh, this was just a sitcom before we had television to put sitcoms on. That's all it was. It was a sitcom that you happened to have to go to a theater to watch. But it was the same concept. So I guess I don't have a whole lot more to say about it other than, yeah, this is one that would have made a good fingertip because this was quick. But the idea that, you know what, there's always going to be new stuff out there, but also people love turning to the familiar. That's why we have so many James Bond movies, for goodness sake. That's why we just keep bringing in new actors and, you know, again, you're always looking for him to do something new, but you also still want to see the same, you know, he's got to be a ladies' man and he's got to have high-speed chases, hopefully on some new vehicle we've never seen yet. No, we've seen jet skis. No, we've seen motorboats. We've seen – man, what else can he chase people around on? I guess every time people complain about sequels, I'm like, yeah, there is new stuff out there though. But yeah, there's always going to be a lot of sequels because that's just how things work. And it doesn't bug me. We've always done sequels. So anyway, away from that man, okay. The next one, we're moving into uncomfortable topics. Yeah, I whisper because stuff that's kind of hard to talk about. And this is one that I am stealing and adapting from the podcast Common Sense with Dan Carlin. He talked about racism versus racism, and he was talking about big R racism versus little R racism. And I'm going to build a little bit on that because I was thinking, all right, and first off, I'm talking pretty exclusively here about racism when I have this discussion, so those are the words I'll be using. But you could just as easily apply these same points to sexism or homophobia or transphobia or whatever issue it is you want. It's all very similar in the point I'm going to be making. And so in talking about this, there's a difference between capital R racism and the much more common little r racism. When I was growing up, I learned that racism, and this is with a capital R here, racism was horrible. Being a racist was one of the worst things you could possibly be. All right. You tell someone they're a racist, you might as well be calling them Hitler. All right. That's how it was. And we all grew up like that. Right? We all know that being racist is bad. It's horrible. If you're a racist, you're a bad person. Right. We got that down. As a result of that, the vast majority of people nowadays, they don't believe that they are racist, not even a little bit. All right? Even when they are saying things and doing things that to you are clearly racist, they honestly don't believe that they are racist. They don't believe that that's part of who they are because that would be horrible. They can't be that. And I mean, Trump says things clearly racist. But I know people who support him, and they support him without shame. They can defend his statements about Mexicans or his statements about Muslims. They do it with a straight face, and they say it without any hint of irony, because to them, there is nothing racist about having these opinions. And, all right, because there's a difference between hating people, between intentionally discriminating against people because of the color of their skin, and between the kind of people who are instead participating in and supporting a system, a culture that discriminates against groups of people, again, because of the color of their skin. Are you following me on this? Am I being clear at all? Probably not. But that's the little R racism. They don't hate people of color. Okay. They in fact probably know and love many people of color. That's not the problem. But right. Some of my best friends are black. But but when they're part of a system where a disproportionate number of black people are being brutalized by or killed by police, they don't see that as racist. They don't see it as a system that targets people of color. They see it as a system that targets criminals. All right. That's different for them. As far as they're concerned, it's criminals that are the problem, not black people. Look, don't break the law. You won't have any trouble with the cops, right? And they truly don't believe that they're racist. So most of them don't see an unfairness in the system in that way. They don't see the difference in treatment on how authorities respond to different types of people. These are biases, expectations that are cooked into our entire culture that lead us to treat people differently or unfairly. And it's hard for people to see because that's how things have always been. You've grown up with it. I mean, I can remember the racist attitudes and homophobic attitudes, especially that I grew up with, and that was considered completely normal. And I bought right into all of that and didn't see it as racist at the time. It took a lot of years and a lot of evolving culture for me to change my opinions on some things. And so in these cases, you know, if I want to educate people, if I want to enlighten, if I want to learn things myself, have real discussions, the minute you talk to someone who feels this way about it and you tell them that they're racist, you've shut down the conversation. All right. Nobody wants to believe they're racist. It's like calling them a murderer. They've got no reason to listen to you after you start labeling them as racist because, well, you just called them racist. Obviously you're wrong because obviously they're not racist. Why would they listen to you if you're just going to sit there and insult them, tell terrible lies about them? All right. So I need a better way to approach it. And I don't know what it is yet, but I'm working on it because the other problem is that the label of racism gets thrown around a lot. It's very common. If you've got a problem, you want to make sure everyone knows how serious your problem is, well, label it racism. All right. Just like our definition of terrorism has broadened over the last 15 years since 9/11. Because, you know, if you want to make sure that the people that oppose you are reviled and hated, you make sure you label them a terrorist because when 9/11 happened, terrorist at the time was in the popular mind, terrorism was you thought of terrorism, you thought of organized groups of people who were working to bring down established governments using terror as their weapon to threaten people. But now there are governments around the world who any time there is a group that rises up against them, whether it's violently or nonviolently, they're labeled as terrorists. These are not automatically, no matter – you invalidate the other side by calling them a terrorist no matter what their point is, whoever you're fighting. We've got now corporations labeling people as eco-terrorists. These are people who aren't even hurting people necessarily, but because they do things to intentionally block things that they see as environmentally detrimental, they're labeled as terrorists because, and you know, sometimes they are damaging machinery and doing things that are dangerous, but they're not targeting people and they're not doing it to send up fear among the populace most of the time. They're doing it because they want to stop what they see as damaging. But they're called terrorists. And it's worrying because I'm going off on a tangent here, but it's worrying because at the time that 9/11 came around and we had the Patriot Act and other laws that came into effect that specifically, look, normally we wouldn't do things like this as a government, but if we're fighting terrorism, it's okay to go a little bit over the line, right? All right. If we're fighting terrorism, we need to take extraordinary measures sometimes, which is perfectly understandable if you're fighting terrorists. But if it is a lone person, if it's a single person who is, I mean, essentially, yes, it may be going out and killing, you know, a dozen people, but it's a lone person doing it as a hate crime. Does that make that person a terrorist? For, I mean, if they're not working with anyone else, it's not a conspiracy. It's not a, are they still a terrorist? And do we still get to use our extraordinary powers under the law to go? Anyway, I'm going way off my topic of racism here. I went into terrorism. I didn't mean to do that. I just paused for a little bit to have a conversation with my wife because she had some commentary on this, and she, again, won't get on the mic, because obviously I shut her down at the beginning of the podcast. Now she won't talk. But having said that, she's right. I'm presenting this very poorly. I started off with the concept of big R racism versus little R racism, because that's how Dan Carlin presented it in his podcast. And I was using that as a way to build into this. And she pointed out, and she's absolutely right. It's all still racism. And later on in my talk here, I've actually got a lot of this written down. I have a lot of notes here. I actually say down here to myself, make sure to make a point of saying, I'm not saying it's not racist. It's absolutely racist. It really is. But my wife is explaining to me, and she's right again, that the way I've phrased it up till this point, you guys might be getting the impression that I feel like there's big racism and little racism, and that maybe the little racism is more excusable. And I'm not trying to, that's absolutely not what I wanted to express. So, you know, if I was the kind of person who would take a do-over and throw away podcast discussion and just re-record it, I would do that here, but I'm not that kind of guy. So I'm just going to keep on talking and to take the earlier stuff I said with a grain of salt. If I was pissing you off as I said it, take it with a grain of salt. That's not how I intended it, but Lisa tells me that's how I came across. And so I apologize for that because that's not what I was looking for. Because the idea here is what I was getting at, and she gathered this part, and phrased it really well, is that it's not that it's not racist. We know it's racist, but if you want to have a conversation with somebody who feels that way, I'm not saying excuse them for it, but I'm saying you can't just confront them and tell them that they're a racist because they're not going to listen to you. So how do you approach this conversation? How do you have a reasonable discussion with them without calling them a racist, without again causing them to shut down and back out? Because it's human nature, all right? When you insult somebody, when you tell them flat out that they're wrong, even if you've got evidence for it, you tell them they're wrong, you insult them, it doesn't change their mind. It doesn't bring them over to your side. It doesn't make them inclined to listen to you. Instead, what it does is it causes them to dig in their heels and they double down on whatever it was they were saying. As Lisa says, it's like Christians trying to convert people by getting in their face and screaming at them that they're going to hell. That doesn't convince anybody that your religion is correct. It doesn't convince anybody of your point of view. And so rather than insulting them and just entrenching them further in their beliefs, which is not productive, I mean, look, now, calling someone racist, especially if they're being racist, it probably feels good. All right. Makes you feel good to know that you put those racists in their place. It certainly works to rally support from people who already agree with you, but is that what you need? That's not changing hearts and minds. It's not changing the people who need to change in order to make things better. And so what do we do instead? I mean, it's well enough to say, okay, calling someone a racist is confrontational and inflammatory and shuts down conversation and is non-productive. But I tell you over and over in education and in therapy that you don't just tell somebody they can't do it. You have to give them the replacement behavior to put in there instead. And that's the part where I'm failing here is I don't know what to do instead, because I picture myself, if I'm in a conversation with someone I know who holds what I consider to be racist attitudes or supports racist systems. You know, if I'm having a conversation with someone I actually know and trying to convince them that Black Lives Matter actually has a serious and legitimate point, then how do I do that conversation? And it's going to come up in conversation, and I try not to get myself embroiled in no-win situations, but sometimes the conversation has to be had. And every time I picture this conversation in my head, I see myself using words like unfair, discriminatory, talking about statistics, which, by the way, is a sure way to keep everyone focused on a conversation, because who doesn't love statistics? And that's the other problem, is that when you're presenting facts, it can sometimes get tedious. Not nearly the same huge reaction you get if you just yell racist. But I don't know. And also, this is the other thing. I mean, again, it's a matter of, to them, you use the word racist, racism. It's ascribing motivations to things, whether you want to or not. Does that make sense? It's like saying that, you know, here's all this stuff that's happening. Here's all this stuff that is horrible and unfair. And by calling it racist to someone who supports those things, you're ascribing a motivation to them. You're saying that, yeah, this happens because you hate black people, or because these people hate black people. It happens because someone intentionally wants to hurt them because they're different. And in a conversation, I guess, it's not – if you're trying to convince somebody, it's never a good idea to tell them why they're doing something, trying to tell them what their motivations are, how they feel about things, because it's something that you can't know, and even if you think you do know, you can't prove. Better to describe the facts of what's happening, highlight how unfair it is, how seriously it hurts people, how seriously it affects the lives of the people involved. Talking about how those things are bad, how we can keep them, what can be done differently to keep things from being so unfair. I don't know. I don't even know if I'm making any sense now. Lisa threw me off. She made a good point, and now I'm sitting here skipping through the notes I made, trying to reorganize in my head. And I don't know. Everything I'm saying even sounds a little overly simplistic to my own ears. For my own part in discussions like this, I'm going to stop trying to use words that would sound accusatory to the person I'm talking to. Stop using words that are going to shut down conversation. I'll see how it goes. Like I say, if it comes up, I don't know. Hold on. My wife's laughing at me. I have to find out why. She's making fun of me for how bad I'm stuttering over here. She's so mean. You should get on the mic. You really should get on the mic over here. You would enjoy this. You have a lot to say. Well, anyway, the stuttering. See, that's why this is uncomfortable topics. I should just skip these entirely. I am no good at this. All right. Let's move away from uncomfortable topics. And instead, we'll go to the science corner.
Oh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
And that music means if you don't walk away now, you might be in danger of learning something. Okay, this is one I got from my son Jacob, and he gave me a link to the, I believe it's pronounced Notoden Benedi. It is a type of frog. In fact, it is the Holy Cross frog, or crucifix toad, which is naturally, if it's going to be this bizarre, is an Australian animal. And these things are the crucifix toads. They secrete a glue across their entire skin. And then, as they're sitting around, insects land on them and then just stick there. And so then they just turn around and eat insects off their back at their leisure, because that's what happens in Australia. And as he was showing me this, and this was, I think, from a few years ago, I don't think this is brand new, but they were talking about using the proteins, the formula for the glue that they have on them that causes stuff to stick to them. They've been able to synthesize that and create essentially frog glue. They have frog glue that is protein-based yet incredibly strong, can be applied, and it works while wet. So you don't even have to wait for it to dry. It's just sticky. And they're using it to bond living tissue. And again, this was a few years ago. I don't know how much advanced they've done it because I can't be bothered with that much research. But the examples they were showing then were using it to bond torn ligaments in sheep's knees is what it was. And apparently it held. It held and it remained flexible. And yet it's frog glue. I just thought that was the coolest thing. So if you're interested, go look up crucifix toads and frog glue. And there's actually a brand of glue out there now called frog glue. And I have no idea if it's actually related. Don't look at that, but look at the glue from the actual toads. It's really cool. So anyway, that's it. Next up, gaming table. I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die. Role-playing games, video games, board games, card games, any games. If it fits on my gaming table, then I am here to share it with you. Or I suppose if it fits in my game night bag, then I'm here to share it with you. First off, I am really thrown. I stumbled so badly over that piece that I am not getting it together. I am so sorry. So you guys are just going to have to bear with me on the rest of this. And also, the last couple of podcasts I've listened to, and I'm just using this as an excuse really, but the last couple of my own podcasts I've listened to, I use the word way too often in my podcast. It drives me crazy. I am so self-conscious of it when I'm listening to the podcast, but I never think of it while I'm recording. And so every time I tell myself, oh, next time I've got to stop doing that. I've got to stop doing that. And so in addition to anything else that might be throwing me today, I've been really self-conscious about it. And so I get a lot of times where I'm just taking a really long pause. Well, that's a really long pause that I would have filled in with an previous. And again, that's just an excuse. But still, oh man, I just feel off my game today. Oh, but here we are at the gaming table, speaking of which. And I wanted to talk about my game bags. And I wasn't going to bring it up because I don't like to talk bad about people. But man, I got to talk about this one. There was a Kickstarter, and I ordered through this Kickstarter. I put in my money for game bags, and really cool game bags, in fact, which are – they're made of canvas, and they're big, nice canvas bags that – you know, big, wide, rectangular bottom. They're very deep, very wide, and they're intended for kind of double stitching on the handles. I mean, the whole thing is really well constructed. And they're intended for carrying your games. That's really what they're for, is for putting in your board games and your card games and all your other stuff that you're going to carry to game night with you. You put them in your game night bag. And there's four of them, and they each have different artwork on the front. And the artwork is all gaming related. So there's one that focuses on board games, and they have funny scenes. There's one that has Dungeons and Dragons. It's a role-playing game, obviously. That's game bag of holding. And so you've got the four different styles and all featuring meeples as the characters on them. And they're really cool. Really cool. And so I got in on the Kickstarter, and the magic of this was that I was going to go pick them up at Gen Con. If you put down Antarctica as your shipping location, then that's the code there that means that I'm just going to pick it up at Gen Con, have it ready for me. So that's what I did. I was going to go get them there. And so I showed up at Gen Con, and the guy wasn't there the first time I showed up at the table, but one of the other people at the table helped me. And he said, I don't find your name. It's not here. I don't see it. You're not here. We don't have bags for you. Sorry. Okay. So I went in and I looked at my own stuff thinking, okay, I must have missed something. And sure enough, I did. It was my fault. And let me just preface all of this by saying that everything here is completely and totally my own fault. I got that. But I went in and checked, and apparently, yeah, Mike was wrong. Thank you, Lisa. It would have been way funnier if you were here and said it yourself. All right. So I went in and checked my email, and sure enough, it had gotten filed in the spam folder, but there was a note from the Kickstarter campaign that said that I needed to fill out this survey. And this survey was supposed to tell which bags I wanted. Well, I didn't realize that there was such a requirement because I had contributed to the Kickstarter at the level that said, I want four bags. And there were four bags available, so I thought that meant I would get one of each bag. But apparently, no, I was supposed to fill out a survey because, well, what if I wanted all four to be the same bag? What if I wanted two of one and two of another and skip the other two because I thought they were ugly? What if – all right. So I didn't fill out that survey, and therefore, since they didn't know my bag selection, they couldn't bring them to Gen Con with them. Okay, I get that. That's fine. But I came back later, and the guy I was talking to said, well, I don't see anything. And I said, well, I think I missed this survey, but I'll come back and I'll talk to him when he's here. Okay. So I did. I came back and I talked to him while he was there, and he was very he was very slick salesman-y with me, if that makes any sense. He was very much like he's selling me something in a TV infomercial. It was that kind of presentation. I watched him. I actually, over the course of the weekend, I got to see him interact with lots of people, and he was always making a sale. Always making a sale, which, you know, he's there at Gen Con as a vendor. That's what you do. But I finally got a chance to talk to him, and I asked him, and he checked and said, yeah, you're not here. And I said, well, yeah, I know I'm not there, but here's why I didn't fill out this survey. And he looks and he pulls up. He has on his phone all of the spreadsheets, and he goes, oh yeah, here it is. I've got you right here. It's marked off that you didn't have the survey filled out. And he said, I'm sorry, there's nothing I can do for you. And I get that. Again, completely my fault. He says, there's nothing I can do for you. You're going to have to just complete the survey. Make sure you mark in there that it's going to go, it's going to be shipped to you so that we've got your address. We'll get it all taken care of. Sorry about that, but you'll have them in a couple weeks. And so I'm a little disappointed, but I have a plan. My plan is that by the end of Gen Con, there will be many people who did not show up and pick up their bags. There will be people that didn't pick up their bags, and therefore I can show up at the end of the con when they're packing up and say, hey, you've got those bags right there. I didn't get my survey done in time. I'm really sorry about that, but could you help me out and just hand me my bags and I'll just go here and we'll just call it all even. And so that's what I did. I went back at the end of the con and sure enough, they're packing up. And yes, I can see that they've got the extra bags there. He tells me, yes, we've got the extra bags right here. We have a bunch of them that we're just going to have to pack them up and take them home with us. And so I say, well, then you know what? Rather than you having to take up extra space taking these back with you, why don't you just give me my game bags now? You can cross it off your list. He goes, oh, yeah, no, there's no way I could do that. That would be, you know, there's – because with the tracking of stuff, and I would have to make sure it's all checked off, and I'd have to it's not going to work out that way. And again, my fault. He's completely within his rights to say that, except that I know he had the spreadsheet right there. He pulled it up in a matter of 10 seconds and showed me, oh, yeah, I see it right here. Yeah, there's your name. Oh, here's your stuff. He had it all right there in front of him. It wouldn't – and he's the only – I mean, he's the guy. It's not like he's got a huge production company. It's not like there's someone doing the stuff for him. It's just him. And he had it right there. I know it would have taken him 5 minutes of work to pull all the stuff up, cross off my name, mark in the proper stuff, and then hand me my bags. 5 minutes of customer service, and I would have been so happy. And I would have been in here recommending him and recommending his other products. And instead, he made me wait. Now, I did get them 2 weeks later, as promised, and I had to pay an extra $11 for it because I had to pay for my own shipping. But, and I don't know. Is it just that he just couldn't be bothered at that point? He knows he's got my sale. He knows he has my money, and he just couldn't be bothered? Was it that, as has been suggested, that, you know, these are four bags that all together don't weigh but a pound and a half? So is it that shipping is $4 and he was making a $7 profit off of handling? Because again, it's just him. So I don't, and again, anyway, it's not really just him. I'm sure there's a team of people who help him out with the boxing and packaging and all that, but I have no idea. It's not like he's got a big company or anything like that. But it, again, it was just annoying. It's something that I know he could have done, and I'm not going to ascribe any motive to it. I just know he could have done it. right there, and he chose not to. This is so upsetting. Pause. Sorry. Had to pause it there for a second. All right. Did I mention that I got the bags and that I liked them? They turned out to be quality bags, just like he said they were, and they were awesome. I really, really like them. But, and as my wife points out, wow, you say again a lot. Ugh. Yes, one more thing to be self-conscious about. Again, no, I'm, so, but the difference is for him, see, I'm trying not to say for him is, it was just a couple minutes of customer service, and had he done that, I would be mentioning his name here. I'd be mentioning his company's name. I'd be talking about the other products of theirs that I didn't actually try out, but I saw. I would have given him a glowing review instead of saying, yeah, no, they were great bags, but the guy's kind of a jerk, which, you know, this could have gone a lot better, but oh well. So I'm not recommending doing business with him, but I will tell you, I did get a quality bag out of it for what it's worth. So let's see. Was there anything else I wanted to – oh, yeah. I did want to say more. I have notes down here. I was just going to say the difference – it's customer service. I love good customer service anytime I can get it. And my old boss – he's still my boss now, but now he's my boss's boss because things shuffled around. But my old boss used to say – because we do computer support in our department – used to say, look, you can go in there and you can leave their computers worse off than when you found them. But if you've provided good customer service while you were there, they'll thank you for it. They will thank you for coming in and breaking their shit even worse than when it started. And it's absolutely true. As long as you're communicating and you're showing them that you're making the effort, and as long as they believe that you are sincerely working for their best interest, then it's okay. Whatever happens, happens. They know it's not because of you. Obviously, it's not your fault because you're so darn nice and you're really trying to help them. And so, you know, just bad luck. Things happen. And so, maybe I've got this situation wrong. Maybe there's something in there that I just didn't understand. But again, boy, from everything I could see, there was no good reason that he couldn't go the extra mile for me. And it wasn't even an extra mile. It was an extra, you know, 20 feet. It didn't look like it took that much. And yet, I had to wait 2 weeks for my bags and pay an extra $11 for them. So, that was disappointing, but at least they're good bags. So, that is the end of the gaming table. Next up, I've only done this segment once before, and I can't even remember what I called it or if I used any music for it or anything, but it's the Nerd of the Week. This is my favorite new nerd that I've discovered this week. And it turns out that my favorite new nerd this week is my son's roommate, Alex. This guy was great. All right, first off, Alex has been his roommate for technically his roommate for about 3 months now, but has been his best friend for like a couple of years at least. And I've never met him. My wife has never met him. We have made jokes forever that he's just made up. That, oh God, I can't believe you go all the trouble of making a fake Facebook account just to convince us you have friends, really. And he's like, we're going to meet for lunch today. And so we're like, well, what are you going to do? Bring a cardboard cutout? How are you going to have a real person there? We don't understand. But we got to meet Alex, and he was so much fun. He fit in with our little family dynamic. It was me, Lisa, Jacob, and Alex. And he fit into that dynamic, that banter that went back and forth, the nerd talk, the jokes, it was just so nice, so much fun. And Dave, if you're listening, and I know you are, he reminded me a lot of you. I'm not saying he looked like you. I'm not saying, but there was something in some of his mannerisms, some of his speech patterns that just, it was like sitting at lunch with a 21-year-old Dave. It was really cool. So I really like this guy. And during this conversation, he gave me he just came out with, you know, we've only known him for maybe 45 minutes tops here. And he gives us the nerdiest line I've heard in a long time. It was awesome. He's talking about Supernatural, which there's some things about Supernatural that he likes and some things he doesn't like, because he likes monsters and he likes monster hunting and he likes the myth and legend that goes around to those things. But the show itself has some soap opera qualities that his mom's really into it. So he's seen every episode because he watches with his mom. But he had some issues. And so he gets in and his line is, yeah, and every season of Supernatural ends with one of the guys dying. And then they just bring him back next season. So great. Now we're living in a world where death has no meaning. I might as well be watching Dragon Ball Z at this point. I love that. I was so happy when I heard that. And I'm like, and I said out loud, I'm like, that is the nerdiest thing I've heard in ages. And I think he thought I was saying it disparagingly, because he's like, well, I thought this was the right audience for it. I'm like, no, this was definitely the right audience for it. It was really cool. So anyway, I love my son's roommate. He's awesome. Yeah, there you go. Now, having completed all of that, that's the end of the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. I'm going to pause for a second to take a drink. And having taken a drink, I will now lead us right into the Pod-O-Matic. Hot dog. This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums. I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list, because Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. And our first number here is number 85. And by the way, as I'm looking through this, some of you, you know, we have a fair number of Pod-O-Matics. We got, let's see, the grand total is 170. So, you know, it's not like we're hurting for them or anything, but there are some of you that are in danger of falling off the list entirely here. So, Kaz just sent me a bunch of new ones. Irish Fan, you're down to 9. I don't know if you're cool with that, but you're at 9. Humongous, 5. Lisa, my wife, there's only 2 from you left. She's still not talking to me. Stan, Dave. Yeah. You guys, really, we need some more. Oh, all right. Let's go down to who's completely out that I think still listens. Let's see. Okay. Zen, for sure. Billy Bob. My son, Aiden. Darks. Oh, I hate to call you guys out like this, but seriously, come on, dudes. Just you know, a little something. Just send me 2 or 3. Just something to make me happy. It'll make my day. I'm easy to please like that. Okay. Anyway, back to 85. Once again, makes my wife laugh. What? I'm not easy to please? Are you saying I'm high maintenance? Is that? She is so. And never mind. She just burped and I thought she was laughing at me. That's how paranoid I am. Oh, man. All right. Number 85 is from Kyle. And Kyle says, F, Mary, Kill. Donald Trump, but he's a carrier of airborne herpes, zombie syphilitic Mother Teresa, or the fresh corpse of Andy Warhol, who is disease-free. That is terrible. That is terrible. I should refuse to answer it, but I think I just sent you the one that's equally as bad as this, and in a very similar vein, so... all right, I'll take a shot at it. All right, Donald Trump with airborne herpes. Mother Teresa, who is a zombie and has syphilis. Or the fresh corpse of Andy Warhol, disease-free. All right, you're killing me. I'm going to have to kill Donald Trump, because I'll just kill Donald Trump on general principle. That's fine. That leaves me zombie Mother Teresa or the fresh corpse of Andy Warhol. I think I'm going to have to marry zombie syphilitic Mother Teresa, who, because of her vows, I don't actually have to have sex with. So therefore, she can keep her syphilis to herself. And then, although, God, I don't know what we'd talk about. Ugh, mostly brains probably. And then that leaves me for my night of, you can't see the air quotes, but passion with Andy Warhol's corpse. There. Are you happy? Is that what you wanted? 37. 37. This is a family podcast, man. All right, it's not really, but it could be, right? 37 is from Mrs. Darks. Sarah Beth says, why didn't you just save the other mini notebook for when your son finishes the first one instead of stealing it to replace your awesome McAwesome pocket mod? Ah, that is a great question. And the answer to that is because Aiden was not really going to use that mini notebook. We bought it for him as a trial, and he said it might help him, but I guess I didn't have any real hope that he would actually continue using it on a regular basis, because he's going to lose it, and he's going to lose it pretty quick. And he did. So, I don't know. No! No, because there were three in the pack, actually. He took one, and I took the other two. And the first one fell apart on me because I wasn't treating it well. And now because I started tearing pages out of the front, I was using it as notepaper. And once you tear pages out of it, it starts to get all weak and loose, and then the others fall out. And so that one fell apart. Now, the second one, I'm about 12 pages, 15 pages into, and it's starting to fall apart because it's been in my pocket for a long time. But, you know, I put some tape over the outside. It's holding together for now. But I think when this one finally disintegrates, which is probably going to be in a couple of weeks, once it becomes unusable, it's just too unwieldy, I'm going to go back to pocket mods. Those work way better because, I mean, they wear out eventually as well, but they're only 8 pages long. So by the time they wear out, it's about the time that I'm done using them. And then I'll just make a new one. And they're free. So, they cost the cost of a sheet of scrap paper, which is free. So there you go. You know what? Pocket mod, way better. You're absolutely right on that part. Part of me is glad that I tried this experiment. Although actually for the next one, there is a pocket journal that came with our swag bags from the Concert Against Humanity. And if it fits neatly in my pocket, in my hip pocket, then I will use that next just because I think it's really cool. But if not, yeah, I'll go back to pocket mods. That's fine by me. 12. 12 is there. No. 12 is 12 is here. Ronster. All right, Ron. Ronster says, how old were you when you last sat on Santa's knee? 43? 42? No, I'm kidding. I don't remember. I assume 10 or 11? That seems too old, but no, maybe 10 or 11 is right. Fifth grade? Did I sit on Santa's lap when I was in fifth grade? I don't remember. 40. Yeah, well, yeah, you were 40, but was Santa hot? Oh, yeah, no, that's not. But, well, that was that at, was that a teacher? Yeah, I know, but was it a teacher Christmas party or something? Oh, he just comes to the school and the teachers get to sit on his lap. Okay, that's cute. I think I was probably 10 or 11. I don't remember. But Ronster further goes on and says, any good or bad memories of visiting Santa? I don't know. I was never a kid who was ever scared of Santa, but so I, to me, going to Santa was always a very positive experience because, well, you get to sit on Santa's lap, you get to tell him what you want for Christmas. I was never disappointed because whatever it was I told him I wanted for Christmas, I don't even know that I remembered what I asked him for by the time Christmas came around, but I remember always being happy with my Christmas presents. So, I don't remember ever having problems. There wasn't anything spectacular about Santa, but there also was never anything disappointing. Although I did, when I was young, when we lived in New York. So from the time I was 4 until the time I was, 11? What? No. We've been from the time I was 4 till the time I was 10. We lived far enough north that we could travel to the North Pole to see the actual real Santa instead of just having to go to the shopping mall Santas that you see. And when I was a kid, I truly believed we were driving to the North Pole to see Santa because that's what they told me. And when we pulled into the place, it says North Pole right on it. And it was a seasonal amusement park type deal that had, I mean, there were Christmas themed rides, so you could go on teacups that looked like giant Christmas tree bulbs. Hold on, we have an emergency. That was weird. My wife was working at her desk, leaned over because she had a cord that was tangled. She tried to untangle it and leaned too far, and her whole chair flipped over, and she must have staggered for a good 10 seconds trying to catch her balance and trying to, and she eventually wound up just landing on the floor. But anyway, she's not here, so I can describe all that. Anyway, the Santa's Village, that's where we were, that's what we were talking about. When we would go to the North Pole, like I say, they had amusement park rides. We got to see actual reindeer. So they had these big stables that had real reindeer in them. You got to feed the reindeer. They, I remember the little machines like they had at the zoo where you could put the quarter in, you get a little bit of whatever feed they give them. And then eventually, you know, you'd get far enough around, you'd see glimpses of the workshops. You'd see glimpses of stuff going on and toys piled up. And then you'd get to go see Santa, and you'd wind up sitting on Santa's lap and getting a picture and the whole business. And that was pretty awesome. Going to the North Pole every year, that was a huge treat. Santa himself, not so much, but going to see Santa, going to his home, oh, that was really awesome. And it's, and you also got to imagine it is wintertime in upstate New York. And I believe the place we went, well, I guess Pat and Sarah Beth probably know. You guys live close enough around there. I can't remember how long a drive it was. I can't remember. I don't know what town it was in. I don't know. But it was winter in upstate New York, and you're going to an amusement park. So there is snow on the ground, and you're bundled up with your big coat on and the hat and the gloves and everything else. And yet here you are going on these little kid amusement park rides. It was really cool. So it was a fun time. Whoop, must be time. 36. 36 is? How are we on time? I wonder if we've got any listener betrayal. I'm a little focused on that now. 36. Okay. Oh, it's from Kyle again. Hey, Kyle. By the way, great podcast. Your last couple episodes, I think your first episode with each kid, so for the first three, your first three episodes were like your warm-up. It was like each one was a first episode, but then episodes 4 and 5 – spectacular. Oh, I can't wait for 6. I want to see what happens when Max gets in the groove here and we get settled down into a real pattern. I'm loving The Cast and the Curious. If you guys have not listened to my brother's podcast, The Cast and the Curious, go search for it, listen to it. It is a lot of fun, especially like I say, episodes 4 and 5, they are really getting to the meat of this podcast, and I'm enjoying the crap out of it. So anyway, my brother Kyle says, if you could upload your brain to a computer right now to create an artificial intelligence to create – all right, Kyle. I don't mean to criticize. To create an artificial AI of you. So I'm sorry, an artificial intelligence? Seriously? Did you just do that? All right. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm a little bitter about my letters on your podcast. Would you do it? I – don't think I would. I would be fascinated by artificial intelligences and being able to interact with them and see what happens with them. I want to know more about them. But having an artificial intelligence that is a copy of me, I don't know that I would like being an artificial intelligence because, again, you're talking about making a copy of me. So therefore, do I – even though there's still me out here in the real world, there would then be a copy of me living inside a computer, essentially, and being an artificial intelligence. I don't think I would enjoy that. I don't think I'd enjoy being there. There would be things about it that would be really, really cool. But then there are things about it that would be really disturbing. And how much experience do we have with artificial intelligence at this point? Because I would worry once you copy people's brains into a machine, I would worry about various – assuming it's a real copy of them, assuming that it's really them just in machine form, I would be worried then about mental illnesses and psychoses and other disturbances, issues that come up that result from, you know, not having a physical body anymore, having your thoughts and feelings translated through digital language, having – there would be all sorts of things that could go wrong. And I would hate to do, I mean, again, I suppose if you get in there and it's not working, then you have the option of pulling the plug on it. And okay, well, it turns out that didn't work out. But once you've done that, does the artificial intelligence itself, if it's really a copy of me and it has thoughts and feelings, doesn't it have to make the decision to pull its own plug? Wouldn't it have to make that choice? You can't just go in and murder it. And, you know, if it's going to develop some sort of odd psychosis or mental illness or other problem, then as if psychosis isn't a mental illness, I put them in two separate categories apparently. But if it's going to develop mental health issues, then will it make the choice to unplug itself, or is it going to go on? I mean, we don't have any idea what that would do. I'm really leery of doing that to myself. So that's just me. What about on your deathbed? Ooh, all right. So we're at a point where my physical body is going to die, but if I make a copy of myself in the machine, then essentially, yes, it's just a copy of me, but as far as practicalities go, the physical form of me is dead, and so therefore this is the only existing copy, and it's created at the moment that the other one dies, so you could imagine that it's a consistent existence, and it would allow me to continue living theoretically forever. Would I do that? And for the same reasons as listed above, probably not. I mean, again, if I was in that situation, who knows if my motivations would change, if that option were even something that would be available, which it won't. But if it were, I have no idea. But I don't think I would. That, again, it depends. It depends. Maybe if we have all, you know, if we have decades of experience that show that this is perfectly viable and that, but even then, just too weird. I don't think so right now. 50. And 50 is from Mrs. Darks. Mrs. Darks says, "What is the hardest accent for you to understand?" I do not know, because there are many of them that I find difficult to understand, and it depends on how – in some cases, it depends on how thick the accent is, how deep into it that person is. And I would say, I mean, I've heard people from Appalachia who I have a tough time translating what it is they're saying. I have heard people from England who, and I can't even tell you which accent out of the United Kingdom we'd even be talking about, because there are so many British accents, so many English accents. I mean, there's just so many that I can't even tell you which one it is. But there's a video, a series of videos, in fact, that Jacob linked me to, where it is some guy who is challenging somebody else to a fight, and it's very trash-talky and very horrible. And then there's responses from the other people on what they'd do to him if they ever got into a fight. And I can't make out but one word in four sometimes, because A, the accent is super thick. B, they're talking really fast. And they're just it's really, really hard to stand. Plus, they're so heated up and they're so angry or so excited about what they're saying that it gets really over the top. And I have a really tough time making that out. And in all these cases, it's people who are speaking English, and I can't make it out at all. Ooh, my wife is over there sending me Podomatics right now. She says, yeah, if I'm going to complain about it, she's going to make me sorry for it. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they are. It's going to be really cool. 92 is from – oh, there it is. It's from Kyle. And Kyle says, how much has your juggling fallen off? I don't practice my juggling often, but I juggle on a regular basis. I mean, once a month I probably pick something up and toss it around. And I haven't done juggling pins in ages, so it would take a little bit of warm-up, but I'm still pretty good. I mean, as good as I ever was. I'm not an expert juggler, but not bad at all. What about those sticks you used to hit/juggle? Sticks? The devil sticks or juggling sticks or whatever you want to call them. Those actually I'm not bad at. I was never great at those in the first place, but They have them at Camp Cedars. If you go to the camp store, the canteen, the whatever they call it there, that's among, you know, frisbees and hacky sacks and other outdoor activities that they sell at the camp store. You can also buy juggling sticks, and so lots of kids will have them. I never bring my own. Mine are worn out. I think the leather came off of the one stick, and so now the set is worthless. But it was really old. I mean, that's fine. But lots of kids will have juggling sticks, and if they do, and I've got a chance to borrow them, you know, I'll try them out. I'll show off a little bit. I'm never great, because I've never been great at those, but I'm better than the kid who just bought them because he thought they looked so cool. So I can always look really impressive to them. And then he says, after the juggling sticks, he says, broom balancing? I've never been much of a broom balancer. It's never been something I've worked hard at. I'm not, you know, again, not horrible at it. I'm better at tray spinning. So you give me a large tray, large plate, an original Dungeon Master's Guide, that size of book in hardcover, and I can put it up on one finger and spin it for as long as you'd like me to, because that's really fun and cool. But I'm not bad. Again, I don't practice, but I've found that with the juggling, for example, it doesn't take long to get back in the swing of things. There's muscle memory there that is never going away. So again, I haven't practiced with pins in a long time. And wow, I do say again a lot. You're right. Man. So I haven't practiced – I haven't done juggling pins since probably college. So therefore, that's been a long time out of practice. But when I pick something up and start juggling, again, the muscle memory is just right there, and it only takes a couple of minutes to get right back into it. So it's not bad, and I enjoy it. I think we'll make this the last one, 95. 95 is – it's from Master. Oh, man, this is an easy one. How awesome is DM Darks? Oh, dude. DM Darks is so awesome. We'll do one more. 65 is – there it is. Kyle again. I know that Luke Luck and his duck like licking lakes, but isn't that called drinking? Well, technically, yes, if you're a dog, but what human being just sits there and licks a lake to drink? I mean, you might sip at it. You might scoop water out. If you're going to drink, you know, maybe you have a cup or a receptacle that you can put water in and then drink from. That would be a normal human way to do it. But to just lay there and lick the lake, have you seen the picture of it? Lapping at it like a dog? That's different. That's clearly Luke Luck's hobby, and I'm not going to knock him for that. Hey, weird, but, you know, if that's his choice, if him and his duck enjoy that, who am I to judge, right? Okay, we're all done with the Podomatics. Let's turn on over to GLaDOS, and she will give you a recap of this episode so far. That was the weirdest thing. I tell you, GLaDOS is going to take over, and then my wife, in a panic, stands up from her desk and runs to this side of the room. So I'm like, all right, I'll wait this out and see what happens. And now we have to do another Podomatic. It is 26. I do miss the children. It would have been so nice if they were here. 26 is from Irish Fan, speak of the devil. Hey, Irish Fan. And Irish Fan says, oh, yeah, see, now you have even less. Now you have only 8 left, dude. Oh, wow. He says, water. Are there really that many health benefits to drinking lots of water? I'm skeptical. Yeah, no, there's not really. You stay hydrated, and in that if you're thirsty, you should drink something. If you know you're going to be out exerting yourself outdoors and you know you're going to be sweating, make sure you bring some water. Make sure you can, again, if you're thirsty, make sure you're drinking something. But it's now, and I know you put in this question actually quite a while ago. In the last 30 days, I have seen so many articles on, you know, drinking all that water isn't really good for you. Is it? I mean, everyone wants to show us how smart they are. I know that's not you jumping on this bandwagon, because again, you put this question in before this suddenly became trendy to start talking about how that 8 glasses of water day thing, that's just made up. It's just, yeah, whatever. But I'm with you. And I've always thought that seems a little excessive, but, you know, When I drink a lot of water, I like it. But I'm not gonna force myself to choke down that extra half gallon of water just because, you know, that's the minimum. If you're sitting around, if you've got an office job, if you're not exerting yourself a whole lot during a particular day, then yeah, that extra water just means you have to pee a lot more and potentially flushes out stuff that you might actually need. But yeah, I'm not so worried about that. But they talk about people who have died of water poisoning, athletes who have wound up drinking so much during their exert because they want to make sure they stay hydrated. And so they're drinking constantly and they've drank so much that they wind up hurting themselves or killing themselves, or I don't know how accurate any of that garbage is. But, I don't think drinking excess water is worth all that much other than just drinking when you're thirsty. You're fine. Oh, but there's a lot more to this question. Irish fan goes on to say, since I received a Fitbit as a gift, I've made a concerted effort to meet or exceed the daily recommended amount of H2O intake. The only benefit I'm seeing is the exercise I get from the constant trips to the bathroom to urinate. Exactly. Are there proven scientifically sound studies that show true health benefits? No, there's not. Well, there might be, but what am I going to say? I'm going to go look stuff up? That's not going to happen. So I don't believe that there are. I believe that it is important to make sure you're hydrated in that if you're thirsty, you should drink. And again, if you're going to be outside sweating, stay a little ahead of it. That's fine. But he then goes on and says, and what is the Nerd Pride Radio preferred terminology, bathroom or restroom? If it is in my house, it's a bathroom. If it's just among family and friends, it's a bathroom. If I'm at work, it could be either. Sometimes I use restroom, but bathroom is my preferred term, just because it is. He says, just curious. Yeah, all right. Well, hopefully that settled that. Not the pisser. No, Lisa, not the pisser. Oh, what? I wasn't supposed to say that out loud? I thought, oh, okay. Sorry about that. The head, the John. There's all sorts of terms, but no, it's the bathroom. So... now she's embarrassed. Now I really won't get her on the mic. Oh, well. Anyway, now we're really going to turn this over to GLaDOS, and she will give you a recap of this week's episode.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2016 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk, and my bumper music this week was Weezer's In the Garage, and She Blinded Me with Science as performed by William Shatner. All the songs I use on this podcast are available on iTunes. You check them out, you buy them, you enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. Don't forget, this podcast is a proud member of the Nerd Pride Network, Angry Geeks Versus, Cast and the Curious, Meat Like Trivia, quality nerd podcasting from quality nerd people. If you want to do something nice for this podcast, recommend it to a friend. If you enjoy it, please spread the word and let other people enjoy it. Remember, I'm always looking for you listeners to do my work for me. Don't forget to send me questions and topics for the Podomatic. Watch out every week on the forums and on Facebook for Listener Betrayal. And if you have a really interesting nerd fact about an upcoming episode, send it to me. Save me all of that grueling research. Oh, you know how I hate that. My contact info, mike@nerdprideradio.com, @nerdprideradio on Twitter, facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be totally honest, the very best way to talk to me is come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. Sign up there. Send me a private message. We will hang out together. We will become best friends in the world. We'll have fun. And now it's time for Listener Betrayal. Before I start recording every podcast, I go out to the internet on my website at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. God, I was going to say Facebook. I can't remember my own website. And then over to Facebook at facebook.com/nerdprideradio. Now I'm flustered. And I post up that I'm recording, and anyone who wants to reply there gets to be included right here at the end of the podcast because I'll read it all off, which is what we're doing. So let's start off at my website at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. And I have a lot of responses today. And, oh, I wanted to check something here. All right, I started this at 7:50, and it is now almost 9:30, so 1 hour and 40 minutes it's taken me to record 1 hour and 10 minutes worth of stuff. So only about a half hour worth of breaks in there. I'm improving. And I know that's not important to you guys. You can't tell. But anyway, first one, Kaz says, and this is on my website, Kaz says, a political question here. Latino apologist Marco Gutierrez, I know where this is going, threatened the United States with a taco truck on every corner should Hillary win. What do you call your taco truck? That's not the question I was waiting for. Oh, all right, hold on. What do I call my taco truck? What, Lisa, what do we call our taco truck? I have nothing. Taco Mico. That's not bad. That is not bad at all. Nerd Pride Taco. I mean, honestly, it's not bad. All right. Because, you know, look, I know I saw that and I laughed as much as everybody else because the universal response is, well, taco truck on every corner, that wouldn't be so bad at all. I like tacos. So, then next, Butterfinger, Zagnut, or Fifth Avenue, which is the best flaky peanut butter bar? Butterfinger for me. I go with the most popular because that's what I like. That's why I like Taylor Swift so much. I go with the most popular. So, I know you're a fan of cover bands. Have you ever come across Steven Seagulls yet? Yes, I've seen Steven Seagulls. I can't remember anything about them, but I've seen them. So, and then there's a link to YouTube here, but I'm going to do that later. Go to meeplesource.com and click on any major link and then tell us what meeples to buy. Really? All right, I'm going to go to meeplesource.com. Wow, there are so many meeples here. I didn't know if I'd be able to get to it. I thought it might be filtered as gaming, but apparently not. So there's farmer meeples, imperial settler meeples, Totoro meeples. Those are so cool. I'm going to go with Bigfoot meeples. I like the Bigfoot meeples. They look like gorillas for the most part, but they are really cool. And they remind me of you, Kaz. So, yeah, we'll go with that one. All right. And then next, what else does Kaz have here? Sorry, my phone locked. There we go. That was it for Kaz. All right. So the next is Eliahad. Eliahad says, who? Okay. And then Eliahad says, I miss you, Gen Con folks. Ah, miss you too, man. Next year, we'll be there. And then, you know, we still got Gaming Thursday, and we got all sorts of stuff coming up. We're fine. And now, again, I've met the 21-year-old version of you, so really, I'll just go hang with him. He's not quite as sophisticated, but he is entertaining. So, all right. Eliahad, what is your favorite song right now? Really? I'm just stealing your ideas for future arrangements. Ooh, my favorite song right this moment would be... Okay, I was watching Hulu, and there was an ad for the next season of Scream Queens, where for some reason they own a hospital now. I've never seen the first season of Scream Queens, but this seems nonsensical to me. But as this Hulu commercial for Scream Queens goes on, I'm like, whatever the song is, I'm buying it. And sure enough, it is a song by Kay Flay called Blood in the Cut. I've never heard of Kay Flay before, but Blood in the Cut was just a great song. I'm really taken with it. So that's the one I've been listening to most because it's brand new. And then I went out and looked at other Kay Flay stuff and found out that she's got some music that I absolutely can't stand and some that I think is really good. She's got some rap, some sort of hard rock, heavy metal kind of sort of – just a mix of stuff. And she's got some good songs out there. But Blood in the Cut is probably my first – the first thing that comes to mind. So all right, next is building off – oh, this is from DM Darks, who is awesome. Building off of Kaz, I know you have a love for punk covers. What are your thoughts about bluegrass covers? I love bluegrass covers. I love them. I have a bluegrass cover of Gin and Juice by the Gourds that is one of my favorite songs of all time. I love that one. I also listen to a lot of Hayseed Dixie. I have a lot of their stuff, like three albums worth that I borrowed from somewhere. And love Hayseed Dixie. I like bluegrass, and I like bluegrass covers. So are you familiar with any? Yeah. Oh, yes, I just answered that question. If not, I recommend checking out the following groups, Iron Horse and the Cleverleys. I haven't heard of either of those, but I will look. And Darks then says, I expect a report on them when you've had time to listen. All right, I'll have time to listen, hopefully soon, and I'll report. Next is from Kaz again. Kaz says, Friend Computer is disappointed with your troubleshooter's progress. Where do you put the blame, citizen? Oh, seriously? I blame the troubleshooters. I blame the whole team. Have you – oh, man. This is – there is – oh, so much shooting and bleeding and shredding and exploding. And it's really been bad the last about three or four moves. It is, there's a lot going on. So, although not as much death, not as much player character death as I was expecting, but an awful lot of violence and an awful lot of scary stuff. And there's been a few deaths. So, but it's been exciting. And I can't wait for you guys to get to read this to see what was going on. When the places you couldn't see, you will be very, very interested. So it's a great, great game. It's going really well. Next is Talvin. Talvin says, woo, Kaz got to post. Yeah, I know. I'm thrilled. Apparently Saturday night is the time to do stuff. I've got a lot of response here. You guys are awesome. Happy Labor Day weekend. Thank you. And what would you name your cover band? My cover band, the Screaming Sneezes. That was just the very last thing that happened that I went, ooh, that's the name of my new band. It was a Screaming Sneeze. So that was the last one. What do you have, Lisa? Oh, gosh. Sticky and Thick. I love Sticky and Thick. It was what was Sticky and Thick originally? Why did we even say that? It was during this conversation when we had lunch with Jacob and Alex today, at some point someone said something. Alex said something. He says, it's just, you know, Sticky and Thick. And Jacob then said, oh, that's the name of my new band, Sticky and Thick. And then Alex said, no, you know what? That should be the name of our new sitcom. That's our TV show, Sticky and Thick. And maybe Jacob said, I don't remember which way it went up. Doesn't matter. But they worked out this whole process that Alex would be Sticky because he was the thinner one. And then Jacob would be Thick. Which would imply that A, he's a little heavier than Alex is, and B, that he's the dumb one. And so they would be Sticky and Thick, and then they started working out plots for their sitcom, and it was going to be awesome. So Sticky and Thick. I think I'll go with that one because that one made me really happy today. Let's see. Next is that was Talvin, right? Yep. Okay. So there's DM Darks again. He says, hey, Eli. Well, this isn't even for me. Hey, Eli, I was on a walk today, and there's at least two houses within a block from my house for sale. Just saying. Wow. Oof. That, you know what? Dude, we should do it. If there's two of them there, we'll all move. Seriously, all three of us will live within a block of each other. It'd be awesome. That's it. Done. They would like Eli to live near them. Because, you know, right now they live in New York and he lives out in, you know, Colorado somewhere. Are you going to get him to leave the legal weed? I mean, seriously. No, no, not our Eli, the other Eli. We have three other ones. That's right. No. So, and by the way, the weed thing, that's just a joke. Dave's not a weed smoker. So at least he says he's not. There you go. Oh, hey, look, I just got a new message from my wife. It says 9 kids left. Oh, that's awesome. All right, next, we'll go over to Facebook. There's still more listener betrayal here, people. Facebook also has more posts than usual. How cool. And the first one is from Akiva. And Akiva says, so, have you finished Breaking Bad yet? Yes, I did. If so, do you agree that Ozymandias is the best TV episode ever made? I don't know if it's the best TV episode ever made, but spectacular. I loved Breaking Bad. I really, really did. There were a couple of slow bits in it where it's like, okay, yeah, no, we get it. Let's just get caught up to the exciting parts again. But for the most part, I loved everything about it, even though it's out of my wheelhouse. It's not my usual style because it is it's a show about people who generally are bad people, and I can't root for them. And yet I was rooting for them, as bad as they were. And normally I don't like it when everyone's an irredeemable bad guy. And then it ended really well. I was so satisfied with the ending, I couldn't even believe it. I thought it was perfectly done. I thought it was really, really well done. So yeah, great, great television. The next one's from Nelly. Hey, Nelly. Nelly says, whoa, cool. I'm at PAX. I know. I've been watching the videos. I've been seeing all your pictures. She says, it's crazy. What's an outrageous idea you can think of that Cards Against Humanity could pull off as a stunt at Gen Con next year? I cannot give you an answer off the top of my head because it would be lame. Much the way that when they go out to the audience to ask for card ideas and stuff, most of the audience answers are pretty lame, and which is part of the point, is then they get to make fun of it and they get to build on it and play around with it. But this year they brought that Junker car all the way across the country, loaded it up on stage. I mean, it's a car that will not drive. It's a piece of crap. And yet they got someone to pay $1,000 for it. Got to pay $1,000 to charity for the privilege of, now you have to go out and make arrangements to get a trailer and haul this thing out of here. And I mean, that was amazing, amazing and hysterical and funny. I can't imagine what they're going to do next time, but I know that I can't come up with that off of the top of my head. I would love to. I would love to be that brilliant, or I would love to pause long enough to think of something that would be really, really funny and then pretend like I came up with it spontaneously. But they're really good at what they do. Really good. I love Cards Against Humanity. I love – the game is awesome. We have the game. We have the exclusive packs. I just got it for Lisa. And so we've got the game. We've got the expansion packs that I've picked up at the Cards Against Humanity concerts. We've bought a couple other expansion packs. We got the bigger, blacker box to keep it all in. And – love Cards Against Humanity, but more than that, I love the people behind the game because they are really genuinely funny people and they really work really hard to really, 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 I've said it enough times, to keep this thing entertaining and keep people excited about it. And I love what they do. I really do. They're awesome. Next is Kaz. Kaz says, give me motivation to get the newest iteration of Tilecraft done. I need it. Okay. Tilecraft is it's a pen and paper version of Minecraft that Kaz is working on, and he has sent me playtest copies of it, and I have looked them all through and played with the rules a little bit, and I really, really like the game. I have not yet gotten a chance to crack it out with some actual people, to even with my kids yet, because I actually have in addition to a couple of games that I've bought that I've still never convinced my kids to play, Kobolds, which I got the playtest of and still have not gotten my kids to play. We sat down and played a couple of turns, and then that was it. And then things didn't work out for whatever reason that day. Never gotten to play through Kobolds. I've got Tilecraft sitting there waiting for me, and there's one other – yeah. No, they only played two turns, and then we got out of it. Aiden's played, but that's it. And then I've also got Beneath Nexus, which I've got sitting there, and I have actual cards for that one. And I went and printed out the rules, and I've got everything set up. I got all the little extra pieces and attachments set up so I could play at any time. Still haven't gotten a chance to play that one. So obviously, you're my friend, and I love you, and so therefore I should really get to Tilecraft first. So thank you for straightening out my priorities. But dude, you got to get Tilecraft done. This is awesome. You're a game creator. It's what you love. You're passionate about it. You really, really need to work on it simply for yourself because it'll make you happy. All right. And then we'll all be thrilled. And eventually you'll get to a point where you can start a Kickstarter for something like this. And then people like me will be thrilled to death to give you the money to make it happen. That's how these things work. You really need to do it, man. Get off your butt. Get it done. And that way, I'll be able to talk about it here and tell people how awesome it is. All right. Next is from Pat, DM Darks. Pat says, hey, this is a long one, dude. He says, hey, maybe this is relevant to what you talked about earlier on the podcast, but probably not. I posted this in a discussion on another friend's Facebook based off a picture of a younger military veteran, he puts in question in parentheses with a question mark, veteran holding the flag upside down with a protest message written on it. Something to the effect of, there is no flag large enough to hide the shame of innocent lives killed. I had commented that the flag shouldn't have been held upside down, and someone said he was holding it upside down because our country is in dire distress. The relevant section of the U.S. flag code says the flag should never be displayed with the Union down except as a signal of dire distress in instances of extreme danger to life or property. Do you think the flag holder is correct in this instance? Yes or no? No explanation needed, as I don't want to bring down listener betrayal. Or do I? All right. It doesn't make any difference what I think. I personally think he's fine to do that because he believes that this is a serious situation and needs to bring people's attention to it. And the fact that the U.S. flag code says that if you are flying your flag properly, you would only turn it upside down to indicate dire distress and an immediate threat. So that is if you are using the flag properly. He is intentionally not using the flag properly. And thus, his protest message is to hold it upside down to demonstrate that he believes that this is a dire threat, and therefore, it's a perfectly legitimate and relevant form of protest. Let him do that. I'm sure that's fine. I mean, you know, again, whether I agree with it or not, the practice of burning a flag to symbolize your displeasure with American action or to symbolize your anger or whatever, I believe that's also perfectly valid speech. And I personally wouldn't burn the flag myself. I'm not advocating that you should do that, but I'm saying that if they choose to do that, then I will defend their right to do that as their version of free speech, as their form of free speech. And so in this case, the guy holding the flag upside down, yeah, he's not following uniform flag code, which obviously not, but I will certainly defend his right to make that protest and hold that flag in that way to make a statement. I'm perfectly fine with that. So, all right, Master then says, I don't even know where to begin, so I won't. Have a lovely evening. Aw, that's it. Oh, okay, and then the next one is also from Master and says, just kidding. I'm watching Alabama football. Really? When Husker football is on? What are you thinking, man? I mean, I get that you live in Alabama and that it's probably important to you in some way, but even being from Alabama, you got to recognize that Nebraska football is seriously more important. Oh, wait, unless I'm an idiot and Nebraska is playing Alabama right this moment, I wouldn't know. How would I have any idea? Wouldn't that be funny if you actually were watching Husker football because that's who's playing? But I have no idea and I'm not going to go check. So anyway, I do, however, he says, I don't really care about football. I do, however, care about competition. So to get into football, which is all anyone around here cares about, yeah, I know the feeling, I play ESPN College Pick'ems. It gives me something to cheer for. Do you get into sports? Hold on. My wife says, according to her Facebook feed, apparently everybody in Nebraska is into sports because everybody loves Nebraska football. Even God himself, because according to her Facebook feed, that was the earthquake this morning. He wanted to shake it so it could be felt as far as Nebraska just to celebrate the opening of Husker season. So, you know, that's what happens. Me personally, I don't really care much about sports. There are sports that I will watch, and that would be I will watch any high school sport that involves our home team because it's kids that I know. And so it's not going to be my first choice of activity, but if I'm there, I can follow a game and I can enjoy it because I like the competition and I like liking the competition. That's actually a good way to point it out. And I like watching kids I know being involved in it. That makes sense to me. If I don't know them, I don't have any investment in it. Unless it's volleyball, for some reason I can watch volleyball. And if it is the World's Strongest Man competition or Viking games, because I've discovered I like Viking games, or or lumberjack games. Oh, those are cool. Stuff like that. All right, I can watch those. But most sports, not so much. Although I did find out also, I was watching a sport called duckball. I think it's duckball. It's duckpin bowling. And duckpin bowling is – I've never heard of it before, but Yancey's showing me a video of it. And it is bowling with these short, really fat bowling pins. And it's on a narrower lane, and you use a ball that only weighs – it's like baseball-sized, all right? So your bowling ball weighs only about 3.5 pounds. That's it. And you're aiming at these really funny-shaped pins, and so they've got different weight to them, and they don't just domino over like regular bowling pins where you can – like one goes down and you can watch the pin as it spreads out as it goes back. No, this just punches straight through the middle, and you've got to count on a lot of bouncing around back and forth to catch everything else. And there was something so hypnotic about watching duckpin bowling on YouTube. And it's some game from by the hairstyles, I'm guessing 1986, 1982. It was a really old video, and it was just hypnotic. We must have watched 10 minutes of duckpin bowling. So that was fascinating. But yeah, no, normally don't care that much about sports. And then the next – oh, this is the last one. It's from my wife. My wife says – why won't you ever let me talk on the podcast? you think you're cute, don't you? Why won't you ever let me talk on the podcast? Are you ashamed of me? Yes. Yes, it's because I'm ashamed of you, darling. So, I would love to have an entire episode where we sit down with just the two of us on the mic and have a back and forth. I would let you do most of the talking, not even like with the kids where I pretty much dominate the conversation and they only get in little moments here and there. So, I would love that. But yeah, no, today it's clearly because I'm mad at you. That's why. So my wife's awesome. And that's it. That is the end of Listener Betrayal, and therefore it's the end of the podcast. Thank you guys so much for showing up. I love all of you. I appreciate everything you've done for me. Keep it up. This is a wonderful, wonderful time for me, and I just enjoy being here. So I will see you guys next week. And now I can't forget to insert the Nerd Pride Network sound right here.